We're delighted to welcome a group of high school students, Baraboo High School. Would they, the students, please stand?
Looking group.
Thank you for coming. You may be seated. Did you have an opportunity to meet with Justice Prosser at about 12:30?
They didn't show up?
They were all having lunch.
Didn't show up, Justice.
Who showed up? Justice Brooks?
I was out there.
Good. The students are here with a national award-winning program called Court with Class. Students from around the state are invited to come and hear an oral argument. And if the invitation is accepted, these students are given copies of the briefs that, in the case they are about to hear. And part of the program, because most of the students come in the morning, is that at noon after the second oral argument, a justice is assigned to meet with the students and discuss the procedures of the case, not the substantive issues of the case. So what time do you students have to leave this afternoon? 6 o'clock or so? Okay, three. Well, we'll see how we go, and maybe we can have a little discussion afterwards. Everyone is invited to that. Does anyone need a summary of this case? If so, please raise your hand, and we will give it to you. It's easier to listen if you know something about the case. All right. Let me introduce the court to you all. Starting on my far left is Justice Annette Ziegler. Seated next to her is Justice Patience Rogensack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks.
Well done, Chief.
Well done. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice, and to my right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her right, Justice David Prosser, who you could have met but didn't. And on the far right is Justice Lewis Butler. With introductions made, we now will call the third case for today, 06AP3092, Michael J. Watton versus Nanette H. Hegarty. And I have the arguments listed as follows. 20 minutes for Attorney Swank, representing Police Chief Hegarty. 5 minutes for Attorney Godlewski, representing the amicus, the Government Lawyers Division of the State Bar of Wisconsin and the International Municipal Lawyers Association. 30 minutes for Attorney Watton, representing Michael Watton, and 5 minutes for Ms. Swank in rebuttal. Is that correct? Okay. We'll start with Ms. Swank.
May it please the court. This case is a review of a published Court of Appeals decision arising out of the public records law. It began as a mandamus action in circuit court in Milwaukee County, which is the appropriate remedy for a denial, or as is the case here, a partial denial of a public records request. Mandamus is the appropriate remedy if the right is clear and unequivocal. In order for a judge to order a writ of mandamus, there must be four criteria that must be met. There must be a clear legal right. There must be a plain and positive duty on behalf of the custodian. There must be substantial damages, and there must be no other adequate remedy at law. In this case, you are asked, for the first time that I'm aware of, to determine the appropriate interrelationship between two competing and countervailing legislative policies. On the one hand is the policy created by the legislature in Chapter 51, which, among other things, creates a comprehensive confidentiality of mental health records. And on the other hand, the legislative policy of public records, which creates a broad presumption that all records of a government entity are open to the public.
Ms. Swank, what do you feel is the standard of review that we should be applying here, given the fact that this comes to us as a writ of mandamus action?
I think the appropriate standard of review is abuse of discretion. In other words, if the circuit court abused her discretion in the determination that she made, then the decision would be reviewed.
And that's true even though we have the public records law at issue?
Correct.
Why is that? Is this an interpretation of the public records law? Usually interpretation and application of a statute is a question of law for the court. I think that's what Justice Crooks was driving at. And if there was a public policy balancing after you've decided what's under the law, then it might be a balancing test, might be a discretionary test of the trial court. So,
yeah, but my concern, Chief, and you're right, my concern is just that. It strikes me that we may have two conflicting standards of review at work here. And so I was interested in hearing what your approach would be. And I understand because it's mandamus, you would apply the normal standard of review for a writ of mandamus action or the erroneous exercise of discretion standard.
Well, additionally, this case asks you to interpret the statutes. Mm-hmm. There are no factual questions here, so it's just an interpretation of the statutes, which you can review de novo.
So you agree, then, there are two standards of review?
Possibly, yes.
Let me ask, just so I can get the framework right. Your response to the question was that it was an abuse or erroneous exercise of discretion, which was the standard of review. Is that correct?
Correct, at the trial court level.
Okay. And how do you define erroneous exercise of discretion? I think you define it that the circuit court misapplied the facts or misapplied the law.
Well, I think the circuit court applied the law correctly.
Okay. Okay. Here, it's your position there are no disputed facts. So the right. issue is just whether or not the court misapplied the law.
Correct. And it's my opinion that the circuit court correctly applied the law and that the Court of Appeals did not correctly apply the law under the public records law.
Could I ask you, under 5130, 4, well, under 5133, and under 5134B4, records can be obtained by a lawful order of a court of record. One you can obtain records from the court, and one you can obtain treatment records. Are those mandamus actions?
No. In fact, I argue that because there is another adequate remedy at law provided in the Mental Health Act, that mandamus was appropriately denied by the trial court and that the Court of Appeals erred in reversing that decision. The Mental Health Act creates a comprehensive policy of protecting these records, but it includes within the Act provisions whereby a third party can obtain non-consensual access of the mental health records, and that's through a lawful order of the court. This court has had an opportunity to determine the appropriate means by which that type of access can be had, in which you painstakingly went through the appropriate analysis in Billy Joe W. v. Metro. And in that case, there was a defendant accused of murder who was who pled not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. A reporter, a newspaper reporter in that case, sought access to the defendant's mental health records. He appropriately sought access under the provisions of Section 51.30(4)(b)(4). This court did the analysis to determine the extent and the circumstances under which third-party access can be had under this provision. To me, this is the appropriate provision to seek access to the records in question here, not the public records law.
Counsel, let me just see if I have this straight. What is being sought is the emergency detention report. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Milwaukee is different, period, paragraph, right? And that is, in Milwaukee, you have the police officer's emergency detention report, and what's set forth in that report is pursuant to statute, so we know, okay. And then in Milwaukee, contrary to the other counties, that report can be taken to the, was it the treatment, what's the name of the facility?
Mental health center.
Mental health center. And under the statute, they can supplement the report, and then this supplemented thing gets filed with the circuit court as a petition. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, we don't know from this record whether or not the what was filed with the court, circuit court, is supplemented or unsupplemented, do we?
We do not, but we do know that the statement of emergency detention was filled out by police officers in Milwaukee. It was presented to the mental health center. The mental health center may or may not have supplemented that document. It's confidential once it's turned into the mental health center. And then that document was also, based on the record provided by Mr. Watton, submitted to the probate court in Milwaukee County, it is again a confidential record.
That's just where I want to stop you, because this is a fact I just don't know and I need clarification. When I was reading the statutes, it seemed to me that they could take the emergency detention report, work with the person a bit, supplement it, and then what do they file with the circuit court? Don't they file a petition for emergency detention or a petition for commitment? I forget the name of the petition, right?
As I read the statute, the statement of emergency detention, as filled out by the police officers and maybe supplemented by the mental health center, is the document, the first document that the probate court looks at to consider whether detention is appropriate. So the statement of emergency detention, which is at issue here, is filed as and becomes, in effect, the
court
petition.
And I'm sure you're right, but to be of assistance to me, could you tell me where in the language of the statute it says that the emergency detention report, even if supplemented, is the one that's filed with the circuit court? That would be of assistance to
yes,
me.
Yes, it's in Chapter 51.15, parens 4. Sub A states that the police officer's statement is delivered to the mental health center. And then Sub B, at the last sentence in Sub B, states the filing of the statement and the notification has the same effect as a petition for commitment under Section 51.20.
Yeah, but what about the supplement? The treatment center, this isn't Sub B, the treatment director or his or her designee may supplement in writing the statements filed by the law enforcement officer or other persons and shall designate whether the subject individual is believed to be mentally ill, developmentally disabled, or drug dependent, etc. And then it goes on to say, the filing of the statement, I'm not sure if the filing of the statement and notification has the same effect as a petition for commitment under 5120. I'm not sure if the filing of the statement is the same as what's referred to as the emergency detention report. Why doesn't it say the filing of the emergency detention report?
Well, if you look at detention procedure in sub 4,
yes,
Milwaukee County, the police officer shall sign a statement of emergency detention, et cetera, et cetera. The statement will then be filed with the detention facility or the mental health center. I assume, since they haven't distinguished that in any other way in this paragraph, they're still talking about the statement of emergency detention. And then in paragraph B, it talks about once the person is delivered and the statement of emergency detention, in Milwaukee County, the treatment facility may supplement in writing the statement filed by the law enforcement officer.
So it's the same statement all the way through.
Counselor, if I may, is the statement that you're talking about is a form document that's developed that is used statewide where it's got some typical form language at the top, then it's got lines at the bottom that law enforcement will often fill in handwriting. And from time to time, the facility will attach or add to that which law enforcement has written on that statement of emergency detention. Then the statement of emergency detention is filed with the probate court, and then the proceedings commence.
That's my understanding.
Is that the way it's done in Milwaukee County? Do you know that?
I've never worked in that area, so I don't know exactly how it happens in real life. But I believe that's the procedure.
Have you seen these documents? Is the statement supplemented in this case?
I don't know if it is. I have not seen that. That would be in the custody of the mental health center, where it's confidential, and there's no way I could have access to it, nor could Mr. Watton.
Does it become non-confidential once it's filed in court?
The statement itself, to my understanding of reading the statutes, is under 51.30 parens 3. It's a confidential court document.
Could I ask a question? We have this statement of emergency detention. Presumably, one copy of this is with the mental health center. A second copy is with the court.
Correct.
A third copy is with the police department.
Correct.
All right. It is not mandamus when you seek a court order from the mental health center, right?
Well, I suppose someone could file a public records request to the mental health center and it would be denied. What I'm saying by another adequate remedy at law is that rather than seeking a public records request to the police department, Mr. Watton could have filed a petition with the probate court to seek non-consensual third-party access to this record.
Okay, but it wouldn't have to meet the more stringent standards of mandamus if you seek a lawful court order to get something from the mental health center.
Correct. It would then be an analysis conducted by the probate court in Milwaukee County, and it would be subject to the type of analysis that I think this court set forth in Billy Joe W. v. Metro.
And also, if you seek the document that is in the files of the court, it doesn't have to be mandamus. It's an application for an order, and I assume it would have to follow something along the lines of the Billy Joe decision.
Correct.
All right. Now, suppose I want to seek a court order to get the police department to turn over the record. Why does that have to be mandamus?
I don't think it has to be. I think that's why I believe the circuit court appropriately denied the mandamus because of the other adequate remedy at law through the Chapter 51 process.
Okay, so what proceeding would you do? You don't think mandamus is right. The police department says they're not going to give you the record. What does the person who wants the record, what type of proceeding do you bring in circuit court to force the issue?
According to the Billy Joe W. Decision, the requester evidently filed a petition. I believe it was in the context at that time with the criminal court because the criminal proceedings were still going on at that time. I am not sure from reading that decision whether it was through the commitment court or through the criminal court, but it was with the court who had access to all the criminal proceedings, the Chapter 971 proceedings, and the Chapter 51 proceedings.
But you don't have that kind of court in this case, do you?
No, not under a mandamus action. The mandamus court would not have access to any of those records, would be unable, therefore, to determine the appropriate interrelationship on releasability. Another thing the mandamus court could not do is notify the record subject or allow the subject an opportunity to object, as they have under the Chapter 51 proceedings.
Could I ask, if you have a lawsuit between the estate of the deceased and, say, the police department, how do you get these documents via discovery?
Well, that would be up to the court in that case to determine the extent and the appropriate process for discovery of those types of records. That was addressed in one of the decisions relied upon by the Court of Appeals, Daniel A. v. Walter W., or excuse me, that's right, yes. And in that case, a family in civil discovery sought access to the treatment records of an individual. It was a discovery dispute in that case, and the court ruled that the treatment record privilege applies to the record subject, and the employees who were to be deposed in that case, who worked with the record subject, could not testify of any information obtained from the treatment record or from anyone else who obtained the information from the treatment record. They could testify to any independent knowledge they might have about this individual, but they ruled that the treatment record applies regardless of who has access to it.
Who has the privilege here?
The record subject, Mr. Gray.
Is he objected?
He did not.
Why are you here? If he's not objecting, why don't you just turn over the record?
Because I don't think it's appropriate under a mandamus determination for a neither the first of all, we start with the record custodian. The record custodian
did he give notice to Mr. Gray? Did he give notice to the record subject?
My understanding that he did.
Under was Nikki?
Was Nikki would not apply in this case. He gave him a courtesy copy.
Okay, he gave him notice.
Correct.
And he said he doesn't care, or he didn't respond.
Well, first of all, he requested the record from Mr. Gray's attorney, who ignored the request.
Okay.
And then gave notice to Mr. Gray. Mr. Gray did not appear for the mandamus action. But it's important that Mr. Gray did not have notice at the time of the public records request, which is what's at issue here. What is a custodian supposed to consider when they're determining the releasability of a record or not?
Well, what about now? Can you release that record? Mm-hmm. Gray has not objected. I come in with a second request for you now. Okay? Are you going to release the record to me?
I think that my position is under the public records law, it is not appropriate for the police department to release this record because it's a confidential mental health record.
But the mental health subject is not objecting. Who has the privilege? Why are you exercising a privilege for someone who doesn't care or want it?
Because when we consider a public record, when a custodian considers a public records request, they don't consider necessarily all the surrounding facts. They look at the record and determine if there's an exception that would apply.
Why don't they consider the surrounding facts? Now, I can see why you don't consider what's going to happen 10 years later, 2 years later, 2 months later. Here you have a person who has the privilege. Give them notice. They don't say anything. Why are you exercising his privilege?
Because it is still a treatment record subject to the procedure set forth in the Mental Health Act.
Aren't there also some significant penalties if, in fact, you shouldn't release it and you
correct.
Do release it that are statutory?
Correct. And this decision.
You have significant penalties if you don't release it.
That's true.
It's the same kind.
Except the consent provisions, I think, play in here, the parent or the guardian or the other person who has to consent to release if it is someone who's been determined to be Chapter 51.
See, my time is up.
You may answer the question,
okay.
Counsel.
There are penalties associated with the release of these records. Before the amendment to this section, there was a good faith exception, which is gone now. So now under this decision, which applies to any request for this type of record, a custodian is in the impossible position of violating the public records law or violating the Mental Health Act.
Who's going to sue you if the subject doesn't care?
Well, somebody will.
That's true every time. If that's true, then you don't do anything. You can't do anything. You get sued if you do it. You get sued if you don't. I mean, the point is you're supposed to obey the statutes as best you can.
It's true.
And if somebody sues you, you're covered by the state, aren't you?
Well, I think since the good faith exception is gone, we're not necessarily covered by the state or by the Court of Appeals decision.
Go ahead.
although the policy is very strong on openness under the public records law, I think the Mental Health Act is even, the policies there are even more strong, and the custodians need to be, that issue trumps the public records law in this.
Suppose I'm the subject of this, and I say, I don't care. I want you to release anything they want that's on me.
It's the city's opinion that the better process is through the Mental Health Act as opposed through mandamus.
Well, I don't have any right. It's my records. I don't have any right to tell you to release
them. The record subject can release the record.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm the record subject, and I tell you to release them.
And he can release it. And Mr. Watton requested that of the subject's attorney. And my understanding, he didn't get a response to that. I mean, the privilege belongs to the subject. The subject can release it, or a court can order release in the appropriate circumstances. But it's not appropriate under a mandamus action where the court, first of all, the custodian does not have all these factors to consider when they're making a decision. They have to make a decision based on the records they have at the time the request is made.
Why do you think this is a treatment record?
I think it's a treatment record because the Mental Health Act requires police officers to create the record. The Mental Health Act brings police officers into the process of emergency detention. They have to observe the behavior and explain the cause that leads them to believe emergency detention is appropriate. The definition of treatment records includes registration records. Now, I know that the Court of Appeals said that the definition of registration record does not specifically list statements of emergency detention, but I think that's an overly narrow interpretation because the definition includes all records created during the course of providing services to individuals. Certainly, this is created in the course of providing services.
Police don't provide services, do they?
They provide services, I would argue, to the department by taking the individual, recognizing, filling out the form as the Mental Health Act requires, and delivering the individual to the mental health center.
Okay. Just as Prosser, do you look at the other question?
Chief, how much time does she have in rebuttal after?
She is out of time, but she has 5 minutes in rebuttal. Is that right, counsel?
Yeah. I'll save mine for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Godlewski?
My name is James Godlewski. I appear on behalf of the Government Lawyers Division of the State Bar of Wisconsin and the International Municipal Lawyers Association. I am also city attorney for the City of Mena. The Government Lawyers Division and the International Municipal Lawyers Association are interested in this case because we contend that the Court of Appeals decision creates an unnecessary conflict between the confidentiality provisions of the Mental Health Act and the broad public access provisions of the public records law. It creates a dilemma for records custodians throughout the state that any decision that they make would be, in effect, a wrong decision because they would either find themselves in violation of the public records law or the Mental Health Act. I want to make clear that the division and the association are not opposed to Attorney Watton obtaining access to this record. We're just opposed that it should be done by a records custodian under the public records law. Instead, we believe that the appropriate body to make that decision would be the probate court in this case or the circuit court in other parts of the state. We also contend that there are specific statutory provisions that make the emergency detention statements closed. There should be no balancing test by the records custodian under the public records law in accordance with the Hempel decision and also Savinsky versus Kimball, which involved records at the Wisconsin Resource Center. In this case, there are two specific statutory provisions, we believe, that would keep these records closed under the Mental Health Act. First, they are court records that are filed with the circuit court in outstate counties and in the probate court in Milwaukee County and are closed under 5130 sub 3A. As registration and treatment records, they are also confidential under 5130 sub 4.
I'd like to focus on that because I can see 51, I want to focus on the definition of 5130, whether or not they're treatment records.
Mm-hmm.
You get to four in terms of whether after you define them. Now, Ms. Swank argued that their treatment records, because the law enforcement provides a service. And I listened to that, and I read that argument, too, and I thought, novel argument. Might be right. It's a novel argument. Are you going to be expanding the definition of service? I mean, certainly this isn't normally what we would consider to be are created in the course of providing service. They're created in the course of providing service to individuals for mental illness and created someplace it sells in the course of providing services to individuals for mental illness, including disabilities. I mean, usually we're talking about treatment and services and transporting someone isn't normally the kind of thing I would consider a treatment or service provided by a health care provider.
Well, I think the definition, though, is broader than that because it's others who provide service. And frankly, from my experience, unless the police department law enforcement intervenes in these circumstances and undertakes to get the person to the appropriate treatment facility, they won't be there. I just faced a situation in Neenah where I had a gentleman that had been living in a house without services there for 2.5 years. Once we were able to get access through an inspection, we were able to do an emergency detention, get that individual some help, and get him out of some very poor situations. But it was the service that the law enforcement provided that they had the authority to under 5115 to actually detain that person, get them to a mental health center, in this case, Theda Clark Hospital, and get services to them so that they could become whole again. So,
if a taxi driver,
Taxi driver doesn't have the authority under state law to detain somebody for that purpose.
I know, but if he were transporting, isn't the service you're talking about transporting? Is that the service that's
It's a combination of both transporting the patient to the mental health center and also completing the initial registration process. I would contend that the 5115 statement is, in effect, the beginning of registration because it lists all the information about the individual, name, address, date of birth, the conditions that the police officer found the individual in, what would cause the emergency detention to occur.
Would you say that the statement of emergency detention is a registration record?
We would contend that it falls under that definition because that definition is fairly broad under the statute under 5130 sub 1 a.m. It just talks about others providing services to the treatment center and providing services to the individual for mental illness treatment. So we would consider that to be service.
Under registration records, the services are to the department or the treatment facility. Is that right?
That's correct.
As opposed to the individual.
Well, it's a combination of both, Justice. I believe that what we have is there is a service to the treatment facility by helping to transport the individual there. The treatment facility doesn't necessarily have the ability to get people in need of services to that facility. It's also a service to the individual, even though the individual may not willingly go along. But it's clear in a lot of circumstances they really do need the help, and that's what the statute is set up to provide. I see that my time is up.
Chief, if I may. So it's a service Bradley. To the facility because they transport.
That would be our contention, yes.
And that comes under a definition of registration records. And it's a service to the individual because of why is the record created in the course of providing service to the individual for mental illness?
It would be the same, in our contention, it would be the same transportation. What you're dealing with usually are individuals that will not willingly seek that treatment but clearly need it.
Okay, I get back to my taxi driver. Mm-hmm. What if a taxi driver is transporting? It's a three-signer petition, let's say, and they do an intervention on a three-signer petition, and a taxi driver or the neighbor transports the person to the mental health facility. Is that neighbor or taxi driver then providing services to individuals for mental illness?
I would contend they are, but I also would contend that there's probably no record created of that because they're not required to fill out a statement of emergency detention.
That's right. I think you're right. There's no record, but that's not my focus. My focus is you're saying that it is a service because they provide transportation.
That's correct.
And my question is the taxi driver also providing to the individual services for mental illness by providing transportation?
I would agree. It's transportation, nonetheless. We're getting the individual to the place where they need to have the treatment.
Suppose the taxi driver is a computer person and has a portable computer and a printing machine in the car, which is quite possible, and fills and has a complete statement about what the driver saw, what happened, and why he's transporting it, and puts it in the mental health institution as he deposits the individual.
Well, in that case, Your Honor, I would contend that that has become a record that's being held by the mental health center, and under the rule in this case, the individual that also provided that report is prohibited from disclosing the contents of that report. So I think they would be under the same conditions as the police department. In that case, my experience in 16 years of municipal practice, I've never seen that happen. But the same rule would apply to them, and I would hope the treatment center would advise them that if they do have a record, that they don't release it. These are confidential situations, very sensitive situations for the individual receiving mental health care.
What if the individual says, "Okay with me to release the record"?
If the individual does say that, now ultimately, then the court has the in its informed consent. The court can order that released.
But you keep coming back to the court. What about the police department?
Well, typically, we won't have that contact with the individual. If we did get the informed consent of the individual, that would be a different circumstance, and I haven't really examined that closely. But that certainly, if it was informed consent, that is one basis on which the record could be released. At the time that Chief Hegarty was deciding this matter, though, she did not have that informed consent.
Did she advise this person?
Well, I would contend that under the 19.356 sub 1, that she doesn't have the obligation to notify the person. In fact, that person under that was Nikki Fix legislation, if you will, doesn't have the right to intervene in the case. So they would neither know that it's being sought to be released, nor would they have the right under the public records law to intervene.
But he was advised here.
Only after Chief Hegarty had made the decision to not release the record. And it was then at that point, it was before the circuit court on the mandamus action. So the decision had already been made, and if the court had analyzed it under Chapter 51, it's possible they could have made that decision, but they didn't do that. They decided it under the public records law.
Is mandamus the right remedy here?
I don't believe it is the right remedy, Your Honor. I believe that, like the Billy Joe case that Attorney Swank referred to, the proper procedure would have been to petition the court for an order under Chapter 51 and to follow that procedure that the Racine Journal-Times did in that case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and may it please the court. I'm Michael Watton from Milwaukee, and I see this case completely different than the city and the amicus brief suggests. I see this case as a much greater issue, an issue which is listed in the statute that a representative government is dependent on an informed electorate. That's what this is. We are talking about information about what the city was doing. That's what I'm after here. And we know just by looking at the artwork in this room that in the back we have a court that was from Rome. Rome had a representative government. No, Rome no longer exists. What's so important about representative government is we need information. We have to know what is our government doing. And that's the purpose behind my request. Now, when I got the response, if you look at the response from Chief Hegarty, She basically says, I don't see much public use in this document. Move along here, nothing to see. Well, I think there's great things to see in there, and it has so much to do with the factors surrounding this case. Now, just a few words about the story. Why is this so important? Because sometimes it's hard to determine in the written fact. I know this family. The father gets killed. He gets murdered next to his home. That's usually the end of a story. It's the beginning of our story. Because in the 39 days before this, the police had multiple contacts with somebody named Sidney Gray. He's the killer here. Now, they didn't just meet him once 39 days earlier when they picked him up for a Chapter 51. Well, the only reason I know they picked him up is because he made that public statement. I wouldn't know, right?
Counselor,
I can't find.
But the dispute here is not whether your clients should have these records. I don't think anybody's contested that they should have the records. So if there's a problem that began with this awful tragedy of the murder that occurred here, that's understandable, I think, by both sides of this argument here. They're talking about the process you used. They're saying you should have just filed a motion in court and requested the records from the judge, from probate court. So if you can tell me, please, why didn't you just do that if you had that opportunity?
Because I couldn't find the case number, Your Honor. Actually, I walked in to Judge D'Amato's courtroom with just a motion. Don't know what that motion has to be because the statute doesn't indicate. And basically, I was turned away. Well, you don't have a case number. Can I get a case number on the probate? No, I cannot get a case number on the probate. It doesn't exist in the CCAP system. So I decided, wait a second, I don't really need his treatment record. I don't really need the court record. There's a third record out there. It's a police officer, what did I do today record. That police officer, what did I do today record, is in the Milwaukee Police Department records. That's what I'm seeking. I want to know, what did you do today? That is the substance of the record I'm after. Now, I then say, I look at my statute book and I say, is that a public record I can get? Well, it looks like a public record. If you read Chapter 19, yes, I can go into the police department. If I can get a relatively straightforward request out, well, I know the date. I know the record I'm looking for. I know the record of what that police officer saw in public. And I know that because Sidney Gray told us. He made it public. If it's already public, you can't make it private. So now there's a public record. It is a Milwaukee Police Department piece of paper. Right? That's all I'm after. Whatever it is, it's a piece of paper at the Milwaukee Police Department.
Counsel, was your request before or after Mr. Gray's preliminary hearing?
It was after Mr. Gray's preliminary hearing. I'm not a criminal attorney. It is after he had been in the criminal court multiple times and had asked for an examination of his competency. And the report of his competency says that he explained to the examiner and therefore to the court that he had been in the Milwaukee mental health complex, and he gave the dates. So now the only reason I know about this is because I got it from a public record. So now I am simply trying to get the piece of paper from the police department. The what did I do today put piece of paper. Now in Milwaukee, instead of filing another report or here's my investigation of my day, they simply use a copy of the 51 report. Right? So it says Chapter 51, but it's not a 51 report because the statute says a 51 report is actually given to the treatment center. So what I have is another document. It says Chapter 51, but it's a what did I do today piece of paper. Why do I want it? Because we want to find out what our government is doing.
Okay. My concern here is not whether you should get a record about Sidney Gray. My concern is whether you would be able to get a record of everybody where there is an emergency detention statement. Everybody who is taken into custody by a police officer for any kind of alcohol or mental illness or drug dependency and taken to a mental health facility. If we say, these are not registration records, these are not treatment records, it seems to me, and I want you to answer this, anybody here who would be subject to that kind of transport under those circumstances, no crime at all involved, public record. Now, come back at me.
Okay. Is it a public record or is it not a public record, right? And you worry about everybody else in the world. Well, think about this for a moment. Pee-wee Herman did something lewd in a theater. He was arrested. It's public. It's embarrassing. It's a stigma. But it's public. You are asking for the debate here on should we do this or should we not? Where is the balance? That's done in the legislature.
Was that a mental health case?
No, but Linsmeyer's a mental health case.
But this is a mental health case.
Linsmeyer's a mental health case. In that case, the, it has to do with mental health. There's an investigation record. There's no arrest. A teacher did nothing that even resulted in arrest. Maybe he did nothing wrong at all. There's only an investigation. Those documents are free for us to get.
Counsel,
why?
Yes. So that would apply to juvenile records, too. Juvenile records are open to examination because law enforcement may go deal with a juvenile, and that's what they did that day. So now all juvenile records should be open.
Oh, no, Your Honor. In juvenile records, the state created a special carve-out statute. It actually says you can't get the records of the juvenile. The state knows how. The legislature knows how to write the law, and they actually said you can't get a police record of a juvenile. Well, they didn't say you can't get a police record of a someone who was stopped on a 51, but all of this is great. We're talking way up here, but this is about a statute, is it not? If it's about a statute, why don't we go read this? I was told not to talk if I go over there.
Good advice.
Let's read the statute.
Can we read it?
You
yes.
Tell me why this is not a registration record.
Okay, tell us what number of the statute you're reading first.
Your Honor, the registration record, 51.31 a.m.
51.31 a.m.
51.31 a.m.
Got it.
Sorry, Your Honor. That is a definition of a registration record, right? Before we go there and get to the issue that Justice Bradley had mentioned, which is who's providing services to whom, right? There's a question in there. So what? My question, my response or my Socratic question is, so what if it's a registration record? Where in 51.31 a.m. is a registration record off limits? It is not off limits. What is off limits is in 51.30 number 4A, confidentiality of records. And in that section, except it says clearly, and I'll read a bit, except as otherwise provided in this chapter and in a few other sections, all treatment records shall remain confidential and are privileged to the subject individual. Treatment records are what's exempt under the law, not registration records.
Well, actually, counsel, if I can follow up Justice Prosser's question, because I think he and I are looking at the same section. Under 1B, treatment records include the registration and all other records. So if we're talking about treatment records, that includes registration records. And I have to ask the question. I've been waiting for the appropriate time to jump in here. None of the parties have talked about Section 51.61.1N. We have the right to confidentiality of all treatment records, have the right to inspect and copy such records, and have the right to challenge the accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or relevance of information relating to the individual in such records as provided in Section 51.30. So there's multiple sections that talk about confidentiality of treatment records. And if a registration record is a treatment record, then don't both of those sections apply?
With due respect, Your Honor, your short reading paragraph B of 51.31B, continue down to the third line, and you'll see that it has to be maintained by one of four groups. The department, that's Health and Family Services. The county departments, that may be Milwaukee Mental Health Complex, and their staffs, and by treatment facilities. The Milwaukee Police Department is none of those. You cannot, I'm sorry, Justice Prosser, I don't get to talk over you.
Well, are you telling me, sir, that this statement of emergency detention is not maintained by the mental health center?
That is correct. This statement...
If I went there and asked, maybe they wouldn't even answer this, but do they have an emergency statement of emergency detention at the mental health center for Sidney Gray that goes to, June and July 2006?
Your Honor, my response is, I'm the master of my complaint. I did not ask for the record at the Milwaukee Mental Health Complex. The record I asked for is sitting in the Milwaukee Police Department records. You have a logical fallacy in your argument, sir. The thing and its twin are not itself. You and the picture of you in a mirror, if you go take, well, not you, sir, but if I were to go take freshman logic again, I would fail the class if the thing and its exact copy are not two different things. It's logically inconsistent. Additionally, in Stone versus UW, because of that logical inconsistency they put in footnote number two, we're not saying when you ask for records from multiple departments, because the logic falls apart. And if your argument is correct, then Chief Justice Abrahamson, in her portion of Billy Joe W., really was writing for fun, because she said it's important to note that what they were asking for were court records and not treatment records. Ah, if there's something in the court, it's a court record. If there's something in the mental health complex file, it's a treatment record. If there's something else, it doesn't take both. So, continuing with the problem of logic, don't we have a significant problem here? Because let's say that the county attorney, while doing a 51, says, Your Honor, I want to put into the record the fact that the subject here of the 51 has been arrested 42 times. I am going to give you a stack to put into the record of 42 arrest records, right? Now a stranger appears at MPD. At the Milwaukee Police Department, and he says, I'd like the 542 arrest records for John Smith. I don't know where he is today, but it could be at mental health, but it could be anywhere. And what will the city tell us? No, those became treatment records. Wow, you just ran into the logical fallacy. You can't do it. Why is it important to remain logical? Because the people must know what the law is. So you can't interpret this statute without looking at the statute. And when you look at the statute, you can't go beyond the narrow. Remember 1936 and 19.36 and not 1936?
Oh, I remember. Do you?
Oh, I need a nap.
I apologize, but 19.36 and 19.31, okay. We've got to be narrow. Well, now you want expanse. You want to say the piece of paper at MPD and the treatment record are the same. Can't do it. Can't do it. So when you look at this, when you start to really statute interpret, can't do it.
I have often been accused of logical fallacies by my colleagues, but if you have exactly the same record at the mental health center and in the court and in the police department, and you can't get it, at least very easily, without a court order, at the mental health center or through the court, but you can get it much more easily because it isn't even a public record. Or, excuse me, it isn't even an exempt record when it's in the police department. I think Judge Fiorenzo said, it just doesn't make any sense to say it's confidential here, but it's not confidential there. Now, why don't you answer that one?
I don't recall that there's a question, or I couldn't. What is the question?
What is wrong with Judge Fiorenzo's argument that it's sort of absurd to say it's confidential here, but it isn't confidential there?
Because it is written in the statute the way it is written in the statute. Wait, if a person is arrested, right, and it's embarrassing, you can get that. Right? So what we have to do is we have to maintain clear to the law. Yes, well, here's where if you want to make a balance, you don't do it by reinventing a statute that doesn't apply. You have to do it part two. Let's do the balance, right? So either members of this court can go along with item one. I win because at the Milwaukee Police Department, they are not public. They are public record, and yes, I can get them from a mandamus action. Or you have to go through part number two. Judge Fiorenza confused the balance test with the statute. The statute has to be read according to its words, not according to what we want it to say, what it says. But then you can do number two, right? You can do a balance afterwards. If you do a balance afterwards, what happens in this case? I still win, Your Honor. And I win because before the city is saying that that piece of paper I got October 24th was the official date of getting the response from the city. Before that time, they had my mandamus writ. They had my brief. Because remember, I walked in fully loaded for Judge Fiorenza, which is part of our record here. And they knew. They knew Sidney Gray put the record in the public. So you can't deny me the record. I have problems intellectually getting past the new standard of if you put something into a court record that is sealed, then the thing elsewhere in the world, let's say a magazine article, is now exempt. I don't think you can get there logically, but if you want to get there.
But Counselor, he didn't put the record in the public. He put the existence of the record in the public. Because if he put the record in the public, we wouldn't be here. You'd have the information that you're looking for.
Once I have the existence of the record, what is important in the record is to know that the record contains only public fact. It doesn't contain
you don't
anything.
Know that. You haven't seen it. I have a form copy here of a statement of emergency detention by law enforcement. I have no idea what was used here, but this is used commonly in our courts. It says, this form shall not be modified, but it may be supplemented with additional material. So you don't know what all is now contained in this form, whether in fact it's all public or it's not public. You don't have any idea.
In that case, I suppose the court can do an in-camera review, but I would suggest to you that the piece of paper at the MPD wasn't created by a doctor. So what do we mean? What could possibly be out there, Justice Roggensack,
it's not that the content of the document is something you cannot have. It's that the privacy that attends it should perhaps be reviewed by a court before it's handed to you. So if, in fact, you ask for it and there is something in there that you shouldn't be looking at, then a court will look at it. You won't be under a public records request where the court is not monitoring what is being given out. I mean, no one's saying you can't have the document, you can't learn everything that's in there. The only issue here is, should you have gone through the courts? Now, you tell me you tried to file a petition and you couldn't find the probate number. You seem to me like a very energetic and competent attorney, and I can't believe if you didn't keep pushing on that button, you wouldn't have been able to find where to file a petition in Milwaukee County Circuit Court.
Oh, Your Honor, just as you suggest that you do not underestimate me, please be advised that I did everything. I was in the county attorney's office. I was before a judge. I was down at the clerk's office. I was everywhere. But that shouldn't change things. Number one is, can there be, under the open records law, still an in-camera review? Sure. Why doesn't the open records law apply? I ask Socratically because I know I don't ask you questions, but
that's okay.
Of course it applies. The statute says it applies. If the people follow the statute, even a schnook like me who does a lot of bankruptcy law only should be able to get through it. But I did those things, Your Honor.
Well, I think that the question before you, Counselor, that we are all wrestling with up here is perhaps two statutes arguably apply, and it's our job to try to meld those statutes together in a way that protects the interest that both of those statutes are trying to further to the extent that we're able to do that.
What is the second statute that applies? I made a public records request, Your Honor.
Well, I think that the statutes that apply are the statutes that govern mental health records, particularly 5130, and many provisions thereunder.
Your Honor, 5130 specifically says it does not apply because it only covers confidentiality of treatment records, and those must be maintained.
Well,
by
there apparently is a little, you know, that's a little bit of statutory interpretation, Counselor, and there may be a different point of view about what's included within treatment records and whether these are or are not. So arguably, we got two statutes that we have to take account of. It was the legislature's will to put both of them on the books for us. So, you know, we're trying to sort them out. And if it were as open and shut as you say, we certainly wouldn't be here.
Let's take a look at that statute B, treatment records, and I'm speaking then of 5130A1B. Definition of treatment records. So it includes registration. Now you would say, is this a registration record?
The document at the Milwaukee Police Department is not a registration record, only the document that was turned in.
Okay. And all other records that are created in the course of providing services to individuals for mental illness. Is this document created in the course of providing services to individuals for mental illness?
No, it is not.
Why not?
It is not created in the course of providing services to individuals with mental illness because this city that doesn't have to. They can reject it. They can say, we're not going to. It's really a choice. What's thought of here in treatment records is the word treatment. A police officer observes public facts, manifest, overt, threatening to people. That's what he observes. Out in the public, or he's told by somebody in the public, and he believes them to be credible. He writes that down. In fact, the statute says, don't tell us if you think he's mentally ill. Why? You're not a doctor. You're not qualified to do that. But what you are qualified to do is to say, as a reasonable public person, I think he's going to be harmful to another. So where's the treatment?
Maybe I'm missing something. Isn't the whole point of 5115 to take an individual down to the mental health facility so that they can determine whether or not A, he's mentally ill, and B, a danger to self and others? Isn't that the whole point of 5115?
5115 is to get mentally ill people off the street and
into
to the extent to and into treatment, and to the extent that those documents, remember that the legislature has put up many roadblocks to getting any of these, even the MPD record, the one I want, right? Because you can't get it on CK. Nobody knows of this stuff, right? The only way you know of this stuff is when the subject person, and you can limit your holding to those who, say, commit homicide and then try to use it as a defense. That takes us to 904 or 90504, the physician-patient privilege. Remember, in 4C of that privilege, it's blown when you use your mental condition as a defense of some sort. The defendant uses it. He says, I'm not competent to stand trial. Hear me out. Well, I heard him. The city of Milwaukee heard him. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel heard him. It was published. Everybody knows this guy on June 13th or 14th of 2006 was in the Milwaukee Mental Health Complex. Now it's known. But yes, were there other statutory, did the legislature take a long time to figure out, hey, let's box this thing in? Because only, well, you can tailor the decision and say only the, you know, alleged criminal who's going to use it is at risk for the disclosure from the Milwaukee Police Department. You can tailor a balancing test. But what I'm saying is, let's not confuse balancing tests with statutory interpretation. Right? Statutory interpretation, we actually read the statute, but then we have a policy that this court says, yeah, we can figure out policy. So let's do it in its proper place. And in my case, then, if we're going to put a policy issue in my case, it's public. Sidney Gray made it public. If you want to point to somebody, point to Sidney Gray. But most importantly, we want to know what the city was doing. What was the police officer doing? What do the police know? Because that's important to the electorate. Are they letting people out of jail on free passes? I mean, if you read the facts, this guy gets arrested and they lose a complaint which the state wanted to file. And then he gets rearrested. Nobody looks for that old complaint. And he gets the ability to leave jail again. Next night he shoots my client. This is about finding out what the government is up to. This is about finding out what the government is up to by looking at the open records law. I follow the law. And if we don't like some of the policy we want to protect, then protect other people. Don't protect Sidney Gray. Don't protect Sidney Gray. He's the person who put this in the public arena. And he's the reason we're here, because As Justice Rogenczyk said, I'm pretty creative, but I can't get by absolute bars to information which therefore I can't find out about. And the reason the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published it so the whole city could see it is from the same record I found it in. So the point is, you have to follow the law first if we're going to go under statutory interpretation, and if you want to do the kind of Wozniacki balance on the backside, then do that separately. If we mix the apples and the oranges, we are creating chaos in the law because nobody will know the answer until they come to see it.
Let me ask one other question, because you've argued a number of different aspects of this case and a great deal of information that you argue was made available and made public. As I understand your argument, it seems to me, and if I'm incorrect, please correct me, it seems to me that there's information that may be available in the police department reports that don't pertain to confidentiality or pertain to emergency detention or treatment records that are separate from the records that would go along with the emergency detention request that would go into the mental health center. And if what you're seeking is information about what the city was doing, do you need everything that you're requesting here in this particular case, or can your request be limited to information that is indeed public information that doesn't go through the mental health complex?
I asked, my request is wide, and really two issues. The 5130 statement of what gets set aside is really limited to place, treatment record, right? And then there's 5130, that's 5134. 5135 is when it's in the court record, right? So think about it here. One copy in the treatment center. Law says treatment record, can't get it. One copy in the court center. Separate law, separate section, says can't get it. One copy at the Milwaukee Police Department. Why? Well, if...
Maybe I'm not making my question clear. When police investigate different interactions, whether it be a criminal charge of some sort, there are various reports that are created. Some are show-ups that are created by the officer that deal with the circumstances of a particular case. When an individual is taken down to the mental health facility, then there are statements that are prepared in the context of the treatment that's going to take place at the mental health facility to determine whether or not the individual is in danger to another and whether or not they're mentally ill. Now, I think the concern that the court has, and the reason why we took this case, deals with the mental health aspect. It seems to me that a lot of what you've argued here today may in fact go towards the broader issue of whether or not, okay, we've got show-ups that are out there. We have other information that's out there. I need to get my hands on that information. And I guess what I'm asking is, your request appears broad. Does it need to be as broad as you've made it here in court, or can you limit your request to information that is truly public information?
First, I apologize. It looks like I'm out of time. I would like to respond if that would
May,
be right.
Sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. What I requested are all police records which include a signed statement of emergency detention of Mr. Gray, including but not limiting to the following specific detentions. And then I list the specific detentions, and I put on there with all allegations and observations. Now, your question goes to maybe there are other investigative reports that aren't necessarily on this form, Chapter 51. The response from the city is there's nothing there. So what I take from that is instead of, let's assume outside of Milwaukee, right, where they do the treatment and then they immediately give to the court, they may well have officers' notes or create a separate, here's our investigation report, and call it an investigation report. It will have the same information. In Milwaukee, they don't do that. So they use this copy of the 51 as their investigative report. But what's important there is there's nothing in the investigative report. Substantively, it's confidential. So now there's a record out there. I can go right through the Chapter 19. The statute's clear.
Thank you, counsel.
And my apologies if I was overly animated.
That's all right. You might need it at 3 in the afternoon. Ms. Swank?
Thank you. First, to answer Justice Butler's question, Mr. Watton's initial public records request was very broad. He asked for all records of the Milwaukee Police Department, including all contacts that the police had with Mr. Gray, several aliases, dates of birth, locations. It was voluminous, and he did get all those records. He got all the police reports, all the criminal investigation reports, all the 911 calls, I believe, and municipal court contacts. What he did not get was the Chapter 5115 statements, as we have already explained.
Counsel, he says in Milwaukee they used the copy of the 51 report as a copy of the investigative report. Is that your understanding?
Who says that? I'm sorry.
I took it down. He said in Milwaukee.
I wouldn't consider it. I mean,
I'm sorry, what?
The
Mr.
form
Watton said they used the copy of the Chapter 51 report as a copy of the investigative report in Milwaukee.
It is not an investigative report. It is a report of the specific observations of the officer or witnesses of the behavior that gives cause to believe detention.
I took from his statement that contrary to other counties where they may have an investigative report and so you know who was said by what, when, and where, that in Milwaukee County they don't have an investigative report of what happened at the incident when they picked this fella up. Instead of creating a separate record that's an investigative report, they just write it down on the Chapter 51 form and keep a copy of that in lieu of creating an investigative report. That's what I interpreted him as saying when he made that statement. My question to you is, do they use in Milwaukee this Chapter 51 report in lieu of creating a separate police investigative report?
No, they do not.
And tell me why, because he says they do, you say they don't. Tell me why.
If there's a criminal act, they create a criminal investigation report. All of those reports were given to Mr. Watton. Whether there was a criminal report associated with the 5115 statement, I don't know. The 51.15 statement, though, that was denied and is, that is the issue, merely includes the critical information that led them to have cause to believe an individual was in need for emergency detention.
Okay, let me just follow up on that. You know, some guy's walking down the street, Main Street, and I'm pausing because I want to put it in the right words, but is clearly having an hallucination, a schizophrenic, and the police going by and they think, yeah, that's right, I have to pray that I do this. And the police can tell, you know, the guy's, whatever he's doing, he may present a danger to himself. I mean, just clearly out of it. So there's no criminal action there. We see them around the Capitol on occasion. You can say, ooh, you know, someone better get him. He's off his meds, and it looks like, you know, things are really heading south. I'll put it in better words. But anyway, there's no criminal action activity there. I assume if it happens in Madison, it can happen in Milwaukee, that not all Chapter 51 emergency detention reports include crimes. Are the ones that are non-criminal in Milwaukee County, are they the 51 report used in lieu of creating a separate incident report for the records of the Milwaukee County Police?
Well, the 51.15 statement would be the equivalent of an incident report. It includes the facts observed either by the officer or by the witness that led them to believe emergency detention was appropriate.
And is it maintained in lieu of maintaining a separate incident report and a non-criminal 51 emergency detention?
I guess I'm not understanding your question, because there wouldn't be a need for a separate incident report because all the facts concerning the encounter would be included in, as required by the Mental Health Act, in the 51.15 statement.
So they just keep that report and file it in the police department and not have to create a separate incident report?
Then. Because it's unnecessary to do so.
How do you get around the plain language of 51.31B that says the registration and all other records, and that they not only be in the course of providing services, but that also the record is maintained by the department or county department staff and by a treatment facility. In the police department, it is not maintained by any of the listed groups. Isn't that right?
Correct.
So what language do you read into that statute or read out of it in order to say you're covered by that?
Well, first I would read into it that statutory interpretation instructs that you should not interpret a statute that leads to absurd results, which is what the circuit court did and found it would be absurd for Mr. Watton to get the statement at the police department when he's prohibited from getting it at the other two locations.
So your position is that under the exact plain language, police department report is not covered, and that you have to ignore this and say it's absurd. We're not going to read it with its plain language. That's your position?
And more. Okay. There is some language in the Daniel A. decision that states it is the treatment record privilege applies to release of the records themselves and to release of information from the records regardless of who has acquired the record, the information. So you could, I would argue that if maintained by the department is the key phrase to be analyzed. It also applies to information obtained from the treatment record. The copy of the record maintained by the police department is certainly information obtained from what has become the treatment record when filed with the treatment facility. Additionally, the administrative rules state that a recipient of information from a treatment record may not re-release that information unless they have the written informed consent of the record subject or by order of the court.
So the latter would not necessarily apply since the police didn't get it from the treatment facility. The police treatment facility got it from the cops.
Correct, but once it's filed with the treatment facility, it is clearly a confidential treatment record, and then you could apply this reasoning to the copy held by the police department if you determine that it is not a treatment record only because it's not maintained by the department. I think that would be the better interpretation of Chapter 51, because as this court stated in Billy Joe W., the legislature would not have gone to such great lengths to protect the confidentiality of mental health records only for a result that leaves access substantially unrestricted, which is what the Court of Appeals decision in this case does. And I see I'm out of time.
Thank you. Yes, Justice Prosser.
In sum, is your position that these are treatment records that Mr. Watton should never get, or is it your position that these are records that he simply went about getting the wrong way?
It is my position that these are treatment records that Mr. Watton simply went about obtaining the wrong way. He could go through the other adequate remedy of law in 51.30 parens 4 B4, lawful order of the court.
Well, at this point, what is there left to balance?
I don't think there is anything left to balance. If you find that the specific statutory exception applies, then the balancing test becomes unnecessary.
You know, we've had this issue before when you have a statute that says ordinarily not confidential, and then you've got a provision like 4 that says pursuant to lawful order of a court record. What makes it a lawful order of a court record? What sets this forth that says the court can order a release without the informed written consent?
Well, in Billy Joe W., you said that it can be obtained if one of the many exceptions to the treatment record applies, or
but we don't have that. Well, there's no other exception that you're mentioning. So,
or if it's comparable to one of the exceptions.
Well, is it comparable to one of the exceptions?
Or if there's a significant interrelationship between the violent felony and the commitment records. In the case of Billy Joe W., in this case, it would be the treatment records. So that would be the appropriate analysis.
What is it significant with?
I'm sorry?
Billy Joe is not directly on point. So what is the exception that allows the lawful order of the court record?
Billy Joe W. relied on the treatment record exceptions to analyze the...
No, but I want to know what you are relying in this case. I know what Billy Joe said. But so what is it in this case that gives you an exception?
In this case, I think the probate court could find that there was a significant interrelationship
with what? Between what and what?
Between the homicide of Mr. Gray, committed by Mr. Gray, and the treatment records. I don't know that that would be the result, because in Billy Joe W., this court said that that case, your decision came out the way it did because there was a murder and then a plea of NGI and then a request for the records, but your analysis would not be the same if the commitment or if the mental health records were created first, then the felony, and then the third-party request. So I don't know how that would turn out, but it seems that's certainly the more appropriate way for Mr. Watton to try to get access to this.
So your answer to Justice Prosser is you're not sure that these records could ever be released.
Correct.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sway. Thank you, Mr. Godlewski. And thank you, Mr. Watton, for your analysis today in yet another open public record case. And we appreciate your efforts both in the briefs and at oral argument. That concludes our hearing in 06-AP-3092. Michael Watton versus Nanette H. Hegarty. Are you willing to talk to these students?
You have to leave at 3, didn't
you? Oh, you have to leave at 3. Shall we sing So Long? It's good to know you. It's counsel, sir.
Steve Argo, but I was teaching. teacher of these students.
Good.
We're here at the invitation of this court, and if you want to, one of your justices, if you want to talk to
someone. Sure, we will. Okay. Dave? Good. Justice Prosser will do that, and he'll come right down, and we'll clear the courtroom, and thank you all.
What time
we're in, we shall meet in the courtroom at 3:30.